the more we can understand how people's social circles are part of their economic behaviors, the better we'll be able to design programs and policies and, you know, understand the workings of our economy.
Welcome to Vox Dev Talks. My name is Tim Phillips. If you live in a village in the developing world, your social network, and we're not talking about Instagram here, is incredibly important to you. Not least because when you want to make ends meet, you can rely on the people close to you to lend you some money. Now imagine that a microfinance bank arrives. What effects does this have on those networks for borrowers, and what effects for non-borrowers? Matt Jackson of Stanford is one of the authors of a working paper on this topic that has two sets of empirical evidence that may surprise you. Matt, welcome.
Thank you, Tim.
Now, I said it might surprise, so first of all, we need to talk about what we'd expect to find in this case. In theory, how might the arrival of microfinance change the social links between borrowers that I described there?
Well, I guess we would expect the people who borrow from the microfinance organization to have less need to be borrowing from their friends. So one thing we would expect is just to see less borrowing going on between the people who got loans and the rest of the village, and even between the people who got loans. So we would expect that kind of activity to decrease.
And what about for non-borrowers? Is it going to have any effect on them?
Well, there's two possibilities that we expected. One possibility is that they would get some of the money that went through to the borrowers. Mm-hmm. So you might expect them to be borrowing indirectly from the people who got money from the microcredit. The other possibility is that since the people who got microcredit no longer need to borrow from other people, they just cut those relationships off. And now the people who don't get loans are going to have to fend for themselves and probably increase the relationships between themselves. That would be our expectation. You know, these people still need some access to credit, and so they would have to be finding other ways to get it.
So empirically, you looked at the strength of social networks in Karnataka over time. Tell me about the villages in this region. What are they like?
Well, the villages we were looking at were about 1,000 people, fairly poor, so per capita income on the order of a few dollars a day. You know, mostly these were all rural villages. You know, part of the reason that they were perfect for this study was that they're fairly isolated villages, so there's not a lot of activity from people inside the villages to outside the villages. So they look like a fairly good petri dish from a social science perspective. So we could measure the networks within the village and see what was going on within the villages and be less worried about contamination from outside. So that made a pretty clean cut on things. You know, the villages are broken into households that tend to have several generations living in them. And, you know, these were loans given one per household at most, which were fairly large loans from their perspective, but fairly small loans in actual dollar terms.
And how do you measure the strength of a social network?
What we did in these villages is we went in before the microfinance organization entered. We went in 2006 and we mapped out the networks within the village by going door to door and asking people a whole series of questions. So we had fairly long interviews with the families, and there were about 12 questions that we focused on that were the network questions. You know, if you needed to borrow 50 rupees for a day, who would you go to? If you were sick and in need of emergency medical help, who would you go to? If you need advice, who do you talk to? Who comes to your house to socialize? So we had a whole series of different questions, and that produces a pretty rich mosaic of who talks to whom and who interacts with whom and who's there for whom within that village. And so from those, we can piece together the networks. And what we did is we went in 2006, so we have a picture of what they looked like before the microfinance organization entered these villages. And, and there's, you know, 75 different villages that we were in, so we mapped all these networks beforehand. Then the microfinance organization came in to some of the villages and offered loans, other villages it didn't. Afterwards, we went back in and asked the same questions and remapped the networks. And then we can compare before and after. So what happens to a village where microfinance came in? What do the networks look like before? What do they look like afterward? How did they change? And then we can compare that to how they changed in the non-microfinance villages, just as a control to make sure that the changes we're seeing weren't just happening naturally, but we can see which of those changes happened because of the microfinance.
And when you made these observations of network strengths, did they match that theory that we were talking about?
Yeah, no. So the surprise, that's the wonders of science, right? It's you get all kinds of things that are fascinating and sometimes hard to explain. And in this case, first of all, we did see the most expected thing, which is the people who borrowed from the microfinance organization had less need to borrow from other people. So the social networks that they were involved in deteriorated. We saw somewhere on the order of 10 to 20% decline in the amount of interaction that they had with other people. And we also saw a decline in the interaction between them and the people who didn't borrow. Mm-hmm. The surprising aspect was what we expected then would be that the people who didn't borrow would start interacting more amongst themselves because they still need to sort of share income somehow and help income smooth. But instead, they decreased by the most. So when we looked at the deterioration of the networks, it was among the non-borrowers that we saw the greatest decrease in the social networks. So that was the surprising part. And, it took us quite a while to figure out what we think is going on there.
And the real world impact of this decrease in the links between non-borrowers, what would you observe? What difference would it make?
We asked questions also about their finances so we can see, what income goes in and out of the households and where it comes from. So we have, some evidence that people who didn't borrow, this turns out to decrease their overall borrowing and lending. So we do see a decrease, there's other sources they can be borrowing from, money lenders and just directly from family members and other kinds of things. And overall, we do see that this impacts the amount of money going into their households in terms of borrowing. We didn't have consumption data for this. We also have a second empirical study that we did in parallel with this. And from that, we can actually measure some of the consumption that goes on. And one thing that as economists, we tend to measure is sort of how much variability is there in people's consumption over time. Mm. So if you're relatively wealthy, it's not that you're going to be starving one day and feasting the next day. You're going to be able to, through your income, make sure that you're eating relatively fair amount every day and not going through feast and famine. In these villages, we tend to see an increase in the variance of the consumption among the households that didn't borrow. The loss of these relationships is actually increasing their consumption variance. They're less able to smooth that income, and the borrowing and lending is actually having a material impact on their household well-being.
And is this just a reduction in the financial links between households, or are all the social links reduced?
One part that helped us put this whole puzzle together was that we see not only a decrease in these relationships that are borrowing and lending relationships, but also in the other kinds of relationships that we were measuring in the village. So the advice networks disappear pretty much almost in parallel with the borrowing and lending relationships. And we also see a lot of these networks are disappearing at the same rates.
Well, you have models to explain the network effects we were discussing at the beginning. Can you make a coherent model that explains what's going on here?
I actually went back in, I guess it was 2015, and went into some of the villages and talked to people there to try and get an idea of what was going on. And consistent with the stories they were telling, the model that we came up with, and I think that makes the most sense, is that in these villages, parts of the way that people socialize and maintain their social ties and relationships is that they would hang out together in a coffee shop or in the town square and so forth. And if you need to borrow some money, you tend to go there and hang around and talk to other people and see if there's somebody can lend you some money. And so these become the sort of central social places within these villages. And once one of these villages gets microfinance, the hypothesis we have is that effectively that means that these people who got the loans no longer really need to go there as often. They don't have the needs and they'd stop showing up. And it might even be that since they have money, they don't want to be there and be asked for the money from other people. So they stop going, and that makes it less attractive for the whole village to go. And so that has a spillover, meaning that now, nobody goes and socializes, and the social fabric of the whole village deteriorates. So we build a model that has those features, and then you can match up what's happening in the data pretty cleanly if you have that kind of story. So it means that there's strong external effects. We impact one part of the village with financial means, and we end up having an impact in other parts of the village that we wouldn't have expected on the surface to have a large change in their social structure, much less the consumption and other things going on.
As you mentioned, you had another investigation going on in parallel, and this was a randomized trial, wasn't it? Can you tell us about what was going on there?
Yeah, so this first one we were doing in Karnataka, part of the difficulty with that particular study was we didn't pick which villages the bank went into and didn't go into. So what actually happened was the financial crisis came along and they stopped. They planned to roll out things into all the villages and stopped after some time. We don't see a big difference between the villages they entered and didn't enter. So it's quasi-random in the sense that their intention was to enter all of them and they just got stopped for financial reasons. But it's nice to have a fully clean one where we have some group of villages that we think are more or less exactly the same as the ones that weren't entered. In Hyderabad, there was another microfinance program going in, and there we were able to work with somebody who was willing to randomize and go into 52 out of 104 different neighborhoods, and the 52 of them offer microfinance and 52 of them not offer microfinance or actually delay the offering of microfinance. And then we can be a little surer that it's actually a true effect and not due to some difference in the villages that were at the root of everything.
The results you got from this trial, they were consistent with the earlier results you had.
Yeah, yeah. And actually, you always worry. Anytime you do something like this, you know, you say you cross your fingers and hope that the results you had aren't going to completely disappear. And remarkably here, I think the findings were very robust. So they were in the same kinds of directions, sometimes a little larger, in fact, than the ones we found in Karnataka. And also, we were able to collect more data on consumption and what was going on within the households. So we have better data on some of the consumption and impact of this. And there we can see the increase in variance in consumption among the households that didn't get the loans. So, you know, we see more of an impact there.
The external effect of microcredit, bad for non-borrowers who the data shows are less able to smooth their consumption. I imagine it's also bad for policymakers if they weren't expecting this to happen. So how should policy respond to what you found?
This is sort of a wake-up call for any kind of intervention, and it's something where what we're seeing is an unintended side effect, and in this case, one that looks large and detrimental to some of the people involved. And certainly, it doesn't mean that we should stop offering microfinance and we would not want to go in and offer loans to people. What it does mean is that we have to understand the bigger effects of these kinds of programs. And I think the kind of lesson I take away from it, especially as someone who studies social networks, is that there's a close relationship between a lot of the economics in our lives and our social interactions. And the better we understand that, the better we can understand the full impact of some kind of financial program that's coming in. And for policymakers, it means that they should really have to worry about the broader impacts of a program that they're bringing in and make sure that there's safety nets and measurements and other kinds of things as part of that program, that if somebody is being hurt by side effects, that they can take care of that. So, you know, we do want to be able to get people credit. We do want to be able to get people access to financial smoothing that they need, but it shouldn't come at the expense of other individuals. And so that's the kind of thing that policymakers need to think about.
Matt, as you said, you're a specialist in the economics and networks. Is this bad news for you? Do you have to throw away some of your assumptions on this?
Well, I mean, as a scientist, it's great news in some ways. It gives us more things to try and understand and study. And one of the wonderful things these days is we're better able to collect data. We can get more data, richer data, and see all of what's going on and try and get a more complete picture of economic impact. And here, the social consequences are fascinating. And I think the more we can understand how people's social circles are part of their economic behaviors, the better we'll be able to design programs and policies and, you know, understand the workings of our economy. I think it shows us that we can't think of these things as separate entities. We really have to think of people's economic lives and their social lives as one large interactive system. And so from a network scientist, it's a really stimulating study, I think, in a lot of ways.
Fascinating, stimulating, and really important practical implications of this. So thanks ever so much for talking about it today, Matt.
Thank you very much, Tim.
If you want to read the paper about this, it is called Changes in Social Network Structure in Response to Exposure to Formal Credit Markets. And the authors, a big long list of distinguished authors here: Abhijit Banerjee, Emily Brazier, Arun Chandrasekhar, Esther Duflo, Matthew Jackson, and Cynthia Kinnan. There's a couple of versions out, but there is a December 2020 version, so I think that's the one you ought to be looking for. This has been a Vox Dev Talk. The best way to make sure you don't miss an episode is to subscribe on your podcast platform. And we're on all the popular platforms these days, and some really quite obscure ones as well, so you can't miss us. And our past episodes, as ever, are at voxdev.org.